This is Sports Content Kings, talking to today's brightest minds in sports and entertainment.
Welcome to Sports Content Kings, brought to you by WSC Sports, a podcast dedicated to today's brightest minds in sports, figuring out the latest trends and technologies shaping the industry. I'm Aviv, one of the founders of WSC Sports and Chief Business Development Officer. Happy to be here together with my brother.
I'm Shaka, VP Revenue at WSC Sports, and we are the Arnon Brothers. And today we are joined by John Miller, President of Acquisitions and Partnerships at NBC Sports. In this conversation, we'll discuss how he's driving NBC Sports into the future. Get ready for an inside look at the business of sports from one of the industry's top and most influential deal makers.
Shaka, Aviv, good to see you both, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for coming. It's great to have you. I heard a lot of interesting stories. I hope we hear some of them here today. And why don't we start with you giving a little bit of an introduction about who you are, your career path in sports and media, and whatever you think we should know.
Sure. So I started with NBC. I went to college in Ohio at Miami University, and I started with NBC shortly thereafter in 1978. I was the first maven hired by NBC to learn all the different aspects of running and operating a television station, and whether that was sales, sales service, traffic, business affairs, you name it. And I eventually migrated from that into a sales role, and I sold for the NBC Stations Group for 7 years. And then in the mid-80s, I moved over to NBC Sports Sales, and I sold for NBC Sports Network Television for 4 years, and then made the decision in the late 80s that I needed to pivot if I wanted my career to continue. And I took a step kind of sideways and went into the programming role at NBC Sports. And in 1988, there was really an awful lot of opportunity. When I first started with NBC, there were only three networks, NBC, CBS, and ABC. There was no ESPN. There was no Fox. There was no Superstation and Turner. There was no cable, direct-to-consumer streaming, RSNs, any of the stuff that we now are all so familiar with. But I took the job as a vice president of program planning and development in 1988. And I was on the job maybe 7 or 8 months, and we lost Major League Baseball, which was the biggest property we had. So I was really, it was called a baptism by fire. But it turns out everything works out for a reason, and we had to pivot and get very strategic and opportunistic. We ended up getting a new boss and a guy named Dick Ebersole, who came over to run NBC Sports. And I was fortunate enough to work for him for 23 years. And in that time, I've been involved in a lot of different rights acquisitions and negotiations, from the NFL to the NBA. Obviously, we have an unbelievable Olympic relationship that's run by Gary Zenkel and our Olympic group, but I've had the opportunity to work closely with our Olympic team. We've had everything from the NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, NASCAR, Formula One, Wimbledon, the French Open. Kentucky Derby, you name it. We have a great inventory of properties that we've had, that we've lost, a lot that we've gotten back, some we haven't gotten back. But it's a wonderful business, and I've been very fortunate and blessed to have worked for this company for so long and been exposed to so many great people and so many great events.
Some big ones you're getting back soon, right? I got some.
The NBA. So we had the NBA from 1991 till 2002. We were there for the glory years of Michael and Magic and Bird and Karl Malone and Akeem and all these great players. And then in 2002, the NBA decided, and we certainly understood that they needed to really broaden their reach and exposure. NBC at that time did not have a cable relationship with anybody of a sports nature. And so the NBA decided to go with ESPN and ABC, and has had a very successful, great relationship with them since then. We've had our nose pressed against the glass, hoping to get back in if the right opportunity came up. And fortunately for us, Adam Silver and Bill Koenig and the team at the NBA saw what NBC was doing with Peacock and NBC and the entire company, and we were able to make a deal. And so starting in the fall of 2025, the NBA is back on NBC.
Congratulations. We're big partners of the NBA, and we're already talking to your team about how it will look on NBC and what it's going to mean also on digital. So having it also on Peacock and bringing it now to, I mean, the industry has changed since you had NBA. Now the coverage, I guess, is going to be much broader, and you got some shoes to fill now, but you're up for the task. So what's the plan?
We do have big shoes to fill. I mean, we're taking over a very big package. A lot of people don't realize this. We have probably the biggest package in terms of number of games. We'll have over 100 regular season games that'll be split between NBC and Peacock. And then we have a very robust postseason package culminating with the Western Conference Finals in 2026. We'll alternate the conference finals with Amazon. And obviously ESPN will have a conference final as well as the finals. But we're very excited about the package we have. And then on top of that, we have over 60 WNBA games, including the WNBA finals every other year. So we are fully steeped in the NBA, WNBA business, and people are very excited about it.
And I think it's widely recognized that the NBA are a leading innovator, and it's a testament to what NBC has been able to pull off, that Adam, you know, being like a leading commissioner and executive coming in and trusting and seeing what you've been doing. And this is like a certificate of success for NBC and Peacock with what you've been able to achieve. So very excited for you, very excited for the NBA. It's going to be great.
I think so. We've remained and maintained a very close relationship with them in all the years we've been, as I said, on the outside looking in, and we've been keeping them informed as to what we're doing. What's kind of fun for me is that a lot of the people that I worked with when we had the NBA back in the 90s and early 2000s are still with the organization. So whether it's Greg Winnick, who runs production, or David Denenberg, who oversees all of their programming, or Bill Koenig, who works so closely with Adam and Adam himself, it's very exciting for all of us to reconnect with our former colleagues.
I have a question about the other properties and other rights that you cover. Like NBA is like a season that goes a long season throughout most of the year, but you got a very diverse portfolio of properties, including Premier League and college content, but also a lot of individual like events that are tournaments, that are short-term events, but big monumental events. So like, how do you pick which properties to go into? You need to fill a whole year of schedule, right?
Just to specify for our listeners, the likes of Kentucky Derby, USGA, high impact Olympics once every 4 years. It's not a full, you know.
Once every 2 years.
I'm sorry. You're right. Once every 2 years. And now we record this 11 days, I think, after an announcement of extending the deal with the Olympics for another two Olympics. Yeah.
34 and 36. That was very exciting news. Well, you know, different properties check different boxes. So for the NFL, obviously, that's a big property. It's the number one show in all of television. It's been the number one show in primetime for the past 13 years. Every reason to think that's going to continue. We're very proud of the product that we put out there with our production, with our talent. The NFL recognizes how important Sunday Night Football is, so we have a very strong schedule. We have the ability to flex out of a game that might have looked good in May and June, but by the time you get to the second week of November, it may not be as compelling a game. So we have the ability, in cooperation with the NFL, to flex out of that game into potentially a better game. But the NFL delivers you ratings. It delivers you, obviously, an enormous amount of prestige. It's a big, huge benefit for our affiliates. It drives a lot of value for the rest of our company because you get to promote other programming in there. We get to promote Peacock. We got to help launch Wicked, which is a very successful movie from Universal Studios. So the NFL, you know, satisfies all those boxes. Plus, every advertiser out there in the fourth quarter who wants to really get their product out there in front of as many eyeballs as possible, there is no better platform than Sunday Night Football. And so that's a real driver of other businesses. The Kentucky Derby is the number one show in the second quarter. What started off as a 90-minute show on NBC in 2001 has turned into a two-day event. We have the Kentucky Oaks on Friday and the Derby on Saturday. We're on for 5 hours on Friday. We're on for 7.5 hours on Saturday. It does enormous ratings. It's a real magnet for us. We package it up with the Preakness, which follows a week later or 2 weeks later. We have Royal Ascot from the UK, which is their version of the Kentucky Derby, where the king shows up every day. And then in the fall, we have the Breeders' Cup. So we have a very tight, very exclusive horse racing package. We have the Premier League, which is a property that I'm particularly very proud of and very fond of, because we really went to the Premier League and had them have to trust us, because they had been very successful on ESPN and Fox and had been doing good business there. But really, we felt we had the opportunity to take the Premier League to the next level. We acquired the Premier League in 2013 for all the different NBC properties, both NBC and cable. And at the time, ESPN at Fox and Fox had been delivering 13 million viewers a year for the Premier League. Within 3 years, we were up to 39 million viewers per year for the same product. So we had tripled their audience in the U.S. And now when you walk into Times Square, when you go anyplace, you see people wearing just as many Premier League jerseys as they are Major League Baseball jerseys, NBA jerseys, because the Premier League has become so well known and well accepted in this country. And that's in large part to their credit because of the quality of European football that they deliver. But also, I think it's because of our production led by Rebecca Lowe and the two Robbies, as well as our game broadcast. But our production led by Pierre Moussa and Sam Flood and his team really do such a good job of bringing the Premier League out there. We have a secret weapon inside NBC, a young man named Nick Casanova, who really lives the Premier League every day and is up to speed on everything happening with the Premier League and does a great job with us managing all of the game and all the content. And quite honestly, I don't think we're in the position we are with the Premier League without the support of all those different people.
And tell me, it used to be for a Premier League week, you were not able to show all the games. So you'd have to really choose and really focus on having someone like Nick Casanova choosing the right game for you. Maybe was valuable. But I think now the industry has changed and NBC has changed with Peacock. Now you can show all the games. So this brings...
We show every game.
This brings opportunity, but also maybe does it bring a challenge, defocus?
You know, it depends on the game. So the Premier League was led for 25 years by a man named Richard Scudamore, who was really a visionary and a man who got it and understood it and had tremendous vision. And what they made sure is that they scheduled their games very similar to the way the NFL schedules their games. So there's a game every Saturday at 12:30, which is 7:30 here. There's a game at 3 o'clock over there, which is 10 o'clock over here, and then there's a game at 5:30, which is 12:30 here. And then there's two games on Sunday: one at 9, one at 11:30 over here, and then usually a game on Monday. So in those six windows, you know your team is going to play in one of those six windows. Now there are 20 teams. So there are 10 games every weekend. So a lot of the times, if your team's not playing at 10 o'clock in that Saturday early window, which is also called the club window, you're going to get to see your team play, which is a wonderful experience for people who are developing a fandom for Premier League teams. So if you follow Arsenal or Liverpool or Tottenham, you know that you're going to find them in one of those windows, and that's very successful. We also make the games available to everybody on an NBC platform. And my position to the Premier League has always been from day one, we want to be the network of the Premier League, not the network of soccer. We've been offered other soccer properties over the last 12 years, all of them very good properties, from Bundesliga to La Liga to Serie A to Liga MX. And they're all great properties. But if I were to take those on, they would distract from the effort that we put against the Premier League. And I never, ever want to see us do that.
Okay, that's interesting.
It takes me actually to another question I wanted to ask. As part of the deal, you're basically selling yourself back to them how good you would be at promoting the property. We are going to get you to new audiences, right? So as part of the deal, there's probably some obligations or some case plan that you're presenting that's how it's going to be. And that's the reach you're going to get. And then a secondary question to that, then what does it mean also on digital? Like, there's also digital packages. How are you allowed to use highlights? or in-game, post-game, like all the flexibility that they allow you to use and how you use that to promote them. Like,
we buy the rights. We also buy what's called the clip rights. So we own those clip rights as well, because, you know, not everybody can sit and devote 2 hours to watching a Premier League match. So those clips become very important. And if you're a Tottenham fan and you're not able to catch the Spurs game, but you can go onto a site and get those highlights, that becomes very important to them. And that helps us get the message out there. So we did make commitments to promote and market. And that was a big part of our pitch to them, that we were going to take them to a new level in the United States. And to Richard Scudamore's credit, he believed in us. There were several owners who did not believe that we could do it, who did not think that they could succeed being on any place other than ESPN and Fox. So it took a lot of convincing and a lot of showing them what we could do. And I think that we've proven that we can deliver for them, and they've been very happy with it.
That's really great. And I really think that the focus that you mentioned, not being soccer, being Premier League, and staying focused on that, being branded in that way, if you will, you know, working on the brand of NBC and Premier League at the same time as a promotion strategy, I think it's very interesting.
With digital trends now, with people watching, like I didn't wake up at 7 a.m. to see my game, but I want to see a condensed game, maybe a highlight on Peacock or something. But now you're also not limited by channels. So on the Olympics, you have 20-something concurrent events happening, right? And you got that now with some golf tournaments that are showing every event, or a Grand Slam tennis event. There's like tons of concurrence. So on digital, how does that play? Like, first of all, was that part of your package, or you need to now ask for more broadcast rights?
I think it evolved over time, but fortunately, from the advent of technology, and quite honestly, a lot of what you guys do has enabled us to really expand those offerings. There's never been a better time to be a Premier League fan. There's never been a better time to be a sports fan, quite honestly, because you have so much at your disposal, and you can watch it right here. You know, you can watch it on your phone. You know, for a programmer, we used to put stuff on and people would have to come watch it when we put it on, and you'd have to be home sitting in front of a TV, and that's the only way you could consume it. Now you can be anywhere and you can watch it on any device, on any platform. So the programmer is more the viewer. We just go out and get the content, we put it out there, and we just make sure it's available as many different places as we can so you can consume it and you can get it. We have to make sure that it's produced well, that the audio is good, that we have the right talent, that we've promoted it to where you can find it. But now you're a viewer, you're in control, in much greater control than you've ever been.
Of course, and that's the demand now as a fan. Like, you expect to get it, to control everything and to get exactly what you want. So that's part of the emphasis of our technology and what we're trying to work with our partners, and including NBC, on how to do that. But of course, with all your exciting properties and changing industry, this is ever evolving.
So the challenge that this brings, right, when you were doing the programming and you had, let's go with something relatively easy, I guess, by the way, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, but if you had like a Sunday night NFL game, the programming on the competing channels was probably running away. They would not put their strongest competitor in against the NFL Sunday game, right? Sunday night game. So you were competing against other channels. That was it. Now, with the demand, you're competing against everything at the same time. I think it's a great opportunity for the fan, and maybe a really new and novel challenge for you as a programmer and as a rights holder. So,
well, I think a couple of things, Shaka, to that point. It used to be NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox was our competition. So ABC might not put on a blockbuster show against Sunday Night Football, and CBS might not, you know, spend a lot of money on a drama to put against Sunday Night Football. But that's changed in the sense that it's now, we're not just competing with our broadcast competitors. We're not competing with Netflix and Apple and Hulu and Amazon and Paramount Plus. And there's so much
competing with cats on Instagram and babies dancing on TikTok. Yeah.
So the share of eyeball, I mean, that you're going after is very tough, which is why a property like Sunday Night Football that achieves so much in terms of its audience and its reach becomes even more valuable to an advertiser, because there's not that many places where you can reach millions and millions of people with one commercial. It's all so fragmented. And a lot of places, if you're on a Netflix or an Amazon or a Hulu, you may not even be able to run commercials.
I think it maybe ties into Aviv's question from before. Maybe that's why, you know, the Sunday night football game would be maybe a conversation tomorrow at work, right? It's one of the only things or the biggest things that people...
It's water cooler.
Water cooler conversation, yeah.
And that's why the NFL wants to make sure that that's a good game on Sunday night. They don't want it to be a bad game that people don't care about. They want that game to have meaning. And the NFL does a brilliant job with their scheduling. I mean, they make sure that everybody gets a good taste, that everybody's well-treated and taken care of. But then they also now, not only are they taking care of their broadcast partners, but they've also got Christmas Day games on Netflix, and then they have Thursday night games on Amazon, and then they have the international games that are on Sunday morning. So they have so much product to go around. There are only 257 games to divide up among all these different platforms, and they do a tremendous job with it.
And you mentioned the nature of the schedule that's similar to the Premier League, and I don't know how many people really take note of that. The brilliance of the stability and the fact that as a fan you have certainty, or you have your schedule, you know how to...
You know to watch it on NBC, by the way. In the US, you know it's all on NBC and you don't have to look for it.
People take it for granted. My point is that it's so much thought has been put into it. And the fact that you mentioned we planned for a game in October already in May and maybe we can change it. That is, again, so much thought and strategic planning goes into it. I think a lot of people take it for granted. I used to take it for granted now.
Well, I'll tell you what's even more interesting is that in February every year at the Super Bowl, you meet with the NFL and all the broadcasters do this. They lay out their top 25 or 30 games. So everybody has the games that they would like to get. And then the NFL takes all that and they ingest it and they put it into their computer and they rub their magic dust over it. And then a schedule comes out. When the schedule comes out, it's like a national holiday. I don't know any other sport that could announce their schedule and everybody stops to see when are the Cowboys playing the Giants and when are the Eagles playing.
In 8 months, yeah. Make your plans.
Right, exactly. So this is done in May. People make their schedules. If your team happens to be playing in Vegas and you happen to be getting married, guess where you're going for your bachelor party, right? So people make all these plans around the NFL schedule, which is just tremendous on the part of the NFL. And they've been very sensitive about the flex scheduling. So you've got at least 2 weeks out if they're going to adjust. And there are seasons that have gone on where we haven't flexed out of any games. But every once in a while, we'll flex out of one or two games to make sure that we have a good game in that window. It's not necessarily always the best game, but it's to prevent you from having a game that's not as competitive as out there. But that's what the NFL does, and that's why they're so strong and why they will continue to be so dominant.
Let me take us another route. Before the recording, you mentioned something about the changes in the industry and at NBC that rapidly changing faster than ever, right? So can you talk about that?
You know, if you're in this business a long time, you're used to change. If you don't have your head on a swivel, you're going to be in trouble. And what I was saying before, Avi, is that I see more change happening now than I've ever seen before, but it's happening much faster than it's ever happened before. There's been change, you know, when you went from broadcasting to cable and then regional sports networks, and then there was some D2C out there. But now what you're seeing is the evolution and how quickly it's changing, how quickly the reporting is changing, how quickly Nielsen, who's the reporting service, has to adapt to all these changes, because people aren't just watching sports at home. They're watching sports at bars. They're watching sports in dorm rooms. They're watching sports on their phones. And in order to accurately measure audiences, which is how networks value a property and how a property gets their value in the marketplace, that research has to be as authentic and accurate as possible. And those advertisers have to have confidence in those numbers. And so it has an enormous amount of value. And then on top of that, you layer on something like college sports and college football. No other country has a college system like we have in the United States. We have such an embarrassment of riches here in quality sports. You have a whole level underneath the professional level, which is college sports. And now you see whether it's the Big Ten, the SEC, right now as we're doing this podcast, we're right after the first weekend of March Madness, which is an incredibly exciting time in this country. And now you have all these different vehicles out there that people have a chance to take advantage of, that it has to be accurately reported on, it has to be well produced. And it's amazing the amount of change and how quickly it's happening right in front of our very eyes. Now you can watch every March Madness game on your phone, on your TV, on your tablet. It's a great experience for everybody. Advertisers are embracing it. The NCAA has certainly embraced it. Turner and CBS have both done a great job with it. So it's a lot of fun if you're a fan.
I will tell you from our side, like we now at WSC, we cover over 1,000 sports broadcasts a day globally. That means like sometimes there's an event and we cover it in 10 different languages for different broadcasters, and we cover it for, I don't know, we're working with, we had an episode with YouTube TV with Catherine that we talked about how we collaborated to create the key plays and to catch up to live, to enhance the live viewing experience. And everybody's trying to innovate and bring something new to the mix of how the content is actually, what the experience is. Because you're right, it's been, sports broadcasting has been innovative, but pretty constant over the years. You know, since the 90s, how a sports broadcast would look, and this is how you sit down and watch a sports game. But now the platforms, the format, the demand, the expectation of the fans is really, really changing and shaping really quickly. It's changing every year. There's a new platform and a new expectation.
And leagues are adapting as well. I think what Major League Baseball did 2 years ago with the pitch clock and speeding up the game, I mean, baseball has been the same game for 100 and some odd years. And for Commissioner Manfred and his leadership to make the changes that they made, which the purists didn't like, which they got a lot of pushback on, but he said, no, this is what we have to do. It's been great for baseball. It's so much more enjoyable. You can get to a game through a game in 2.5 hours. It's fast. And the quality of play is good. So I just think that when a league makes those kind of changes, like the NFL constantly is making rule changes to make their game better, it's great.
We have stories of that from cricket. You know, cricket kept changing different formats of the game just to make it more TV, a better TV product.
Yeah, no, cricket is a great example. It's an extreme example. Took it from 5 days to 3 hours and now to 2 hours in different formats. But I wanted to ask, how do you start evaluating with all these changes, evaluating the value for you? Because you used to, I assume, you knew the reach, you knew the value for you. You had models that are pretty, not simple, but maybe repetitive, I will say, or modeling that are clear. And now everything's in flux, right? Maybe next year we'll have completely different ways of thinking on how the value should be measured, right? So how do you approach it today after all, or as we're in the odds?
There are different metrics that you use to evaluate a property. So certainly ratings, a property that delivers big ratings, big audiences is important. If it delivers desirable audiences, that means you can get better CPMs. You can charge more for your advertising. So that becomes a factor. If it drives distribution on Peacock, that's now an important consideration. If you have a property that people make sure they want to see on Peacock, whether it's Big Ten football or Premier League games or Ryder Cup or Open Championship, those are important factors. If you can offer alternatives in the viewing experience like you do with the Premier League, so that you have a goal zone, so you can watch different goals around the league while multiple games are being played. So those are all things that go into the evaluation when you go in and buy a property. By the same token, if a property has not evolved and is not delivering ratings and is not delivering enough sponsorship or advertising support, it becomes very difficult for you to continue with that property. And there are certain properties that strategically don't line up with us as well as they might have. This past year, we've had to say goodbye to several properties that have been on our air for many, many years. We had Roland Garros from Paris, which was the French Open, is a wonderful event. And it first came on NBC in 1975. And except for a 3-year hiatus when it went to CBS, it came back to NBC. But this past year, when their rights were up, they were looking for a very healthy increase. And for us, tennis was just not delivering the audience that we needed, and we weren't able to drive the value for it. and we had to make the decision to walk away. And the French Open had put their cable rights on the Tennis Channel and their broadcast rights on NBC. So the rights were bifurcated. So they became less valuable because of that. And at some point, the property had been severely devalued in our eyes and certainly in the eyes of a lot of marketers. It wasn't a great property. It still is a great property, and the quality of play over there and being at Roland Garros is a great experience. But for us to make the kind of investment that Roland Garros was looking for from us as a broadcaster, it just didn't work. So we had to go and say goodbye. Now, they've struck a new deal with another broadcaster. They're going to be on Turner starting this spring, and I wish both sides well. But for us, it just didn't make sense. Same type of thing happened to us with IndyCar. We've got NASCAR, both the Cup races and the Xfinity races. But knowing that we were getting the NBA and knowing the time periods that IndyCar had to run their races, it was going to come in conflict with our NBA commitment. And we had to make a choice between the NBA and IndyCar. So again, we had to say goodbye to IndyCar. They landed on Fox, and they'll do fine over there. But for us, it was just time to say goodbye. And the way we evaluated that property was both in terms of ratings and advertising support and what else was out there from a competitive standpoint.
I'm interested, if you don't mind sharing, as the person that is doing the negotiation, and like you, there are properties that you do want, and you're getting into a very competitive process. It's a delicate expertise. And like Chaka and I are both also like working on the business on our side and trying to create business from a new technology and a new market that we kind of like, tap ourselves in the back there right now for a second, but like kind of innovated and created back.
What you guys have done is amazing. I mean, you haven't been in business that long, and to be able to be as big and strong and as well respected as you are is really a credit to what you guys have done. So I applaud you for that.
Thank you so much.
But when you talk about going after properties, yes, there's properties that we're looking at. I mean, it's not a secret that we're in the marketplace on a couple of different properties, and we'll look and evaluate. And hopefully we bring to the table, look, everybody wants to see a big check. So we're not going to say they're going out for us just because we're good looking. We're not that good looking if we don't bring the money. If we bring the money, we get a lot more attractive.
I was just asking about stories about the negotiation and how does that go about, because it is a delicate expertise. You're going after very competitive properties, and I want to hear about how you do that.
Evaluate a property. Obviously, the rights holder who you're negotiating with expects you to come with a big investment. We wouldn't be looking at these properties if we weren't prepared to make a significant investment. But you know, there's a lot of competitive factors that go into it. What does the marketplace bear? What else is out there? How does it help drive your business? How does it drive your distribution business on Peacock? What does it do for your overall advertising business in the marketplace at the time of year? And whether or not it's a good fit with your other programming. I mean, there are some properties that are out there that are good properties that just don't fit for NBC. For whatever reason.
But if you really want it, it's just about writing the biggest check?
It's not always about writing the biggest check, because the Premier League is a good example. They've been offered more money than we offered them, and they elected to stay with us. Both of the last two negotiations, they were offered more money than we offered. When the Big Ten college football rights came up for bid 3 years ago, they were offered more money for a Saturday night primetime package, but that it would not have been on broadcast television. And they elected to come with NBC because they saw the value of being on NBC and being in broadcast. So different properties carry different, you know, metrics when you do the evaluation. But it also is a question of how does it fit with your other properties? So that becomes an important factor as well.
If you don't mind, like, can you share a success or failure story?
Well, the Premier League is probably the success that we're most proud of recently. We've had it, you know, since 2013. We've extended it now a couple of times. We convinced the Premier League to go from a 3-year term to a 6-year term, which was also never done before in international soccer. We've developed good relationships with them, but I think the thing that I'm most proud of is that we've created generational viewing habits. And by that I mean we get letters and emails and texts and messages from a grandfather who said, I had nothing to talk to my grandson or my granddaughter about, but now on Saturday mornings, we'll sit down and we'll watch Rebecca Lowe and your Premier League coverage together. And all of a sudden, we've found this unbelievable common ground, which to me, as a parent, is great because I got into the Premier League because my son is the one who told me about it and really pushed me to take a good hard look at it, and he was right. There are other properties in golf. For example, we had the USGA rights for 20 years. I was very proud of what we had built with the USGA and made it the preeminent, I think, golf event in this country. At the time, their last deal was up. They had management who decided they wanted to go in a different direction, and they went with Fox. They obviously went for a lot more money than we were prepared to pay. Fox ended up realizing that it was a very difficult sport to do if you hadn't done golf before. It was also a very expensive sport. We have an entire golf production infrastructure, which they did not have. COVID happened, and it was an opportunity for Fox to reconsider their relationship for us to get back in. And so we've now had the USGA for the past 6 years. We still have it for this coming year at Oakmont and next year at Shinnecock. But we love the USGA. We love what it represents. We think it's important. The Ryder Cup is a story that I tell all the time. We bought the Ryder Cup, the 91 Ryder Cup, after we lost Major League Baseball, but we didn't have any money to spend. So we went out and got two sponsors, GM and IBM, and they agreed to be our two sponsors. And then 4 months before the event, because America was at war with Operation Desert Storm in the spring of 1991, both GM and IBM told us that they were not going to be able to support the Ryder Cup anymore. So my boss, who was not a golfer, but was a very astute businessman, said, look, we're going to lose a lot of money on this event. You've got to get out of this deal. And I said, well, we can't get out of it. It's 4 months from now. So we did everything we could to try to sell it and make it work. We didn't end up selling a whole lot of inventory. We get to the Ryder Cup, which is in Kiawah Island, South Carolina. And the Ryder Cup up until that point had been on tape and on cable and on a one-week delay. But we put it on live on NBC that weekend. On Friday, the U.S. got beaten pretty badly, 6-2 after the first day's matches. And on Saturday morning, there was a fog delay. So they couldn't start at 8 o'clock. They didn't get started until about 9:30 or 10 o'clock, which ended up pushing the whole day later. So when we got to about 5:30, we had a half hour left in our telecast, but all four matches were still on the golf course. So I called my boss and told him that we were going to have to stay. And he says, you can't stay. You got to get off the air. I said, well, we can't get off the air. If we got off the air now, we would get crucified. So we finally convinced him to let us stay on the air. He says, well, don't run any commercials. I said, well, we haven't sold any commercials, so that's not a big problem. The U.S. comes all the way back and ties the Ryder Cup, ends up winning the Ryder Cup on Sunday. The chairman of our company was watching, called my boss and said, this is the best thing I've seen ever. Make sure you never lose the Ryder Cup. So we've had the Ryder Cup since then. So I'm pretty happy that we stuck to our guns there. But I mean, there are a lot of fun stories like that. And they're just, you know, the fun thing is there's so many good people in the business that you get to share these experiences with. That makes it even more fun.
That's awesome. And that's the excitement in being in sports, by the way. I mean, those great moments and great events, you can't anticipate it. And the audience, stories for decades that you have from great moments in sports, that's why we all love it.
And it's awesome to hear because I didn't know that. And now I'm going to put it as another anecdote in my pocket of the Ryder Cup being taped and shown a week later. That's amazing, you know, how it doesn't pass. It's not nearly acceptable today and how things have changed. It's amazing.
It wasn't that important an event. Nobody really cared about it. So it's been fun. And then, you know, it's funny. I said at the beginning, when we lost baseball, we had to fill 30 weeks of programming and we had no money to spend. So we created a lot of events that are still around to this day. Beach volleyball is an example that came on NBC in 1990 when we lost baseball. We created a golf tournament that's out in Lake Tahoe every summer. The American Century now, which has become a big summer fun event that a lot of the Travis Kelce and Justin Timberlake and Steph Curry and Charles Barkley, and they all come out and play golf at that event. The first year we did that event, we had 1,500 people. Last year, we had over 80,000.
More than 80,000 what? I missed?
Show up to watch it.
Oh, wow.
80,000 people showed up to watch it. Whereas when we first started, we had 1,500 people show up.
I think for us, for Aviv and myself, I speak for both of us, it's a real privilege to have, and you pick your brain a little bit, hearing these stories and the experience that you come being a veteran, being in the room, right, where all the big discussions are happening, making these big decisions, calling the shots. Privileged for us and excited for what's coming for NBC and where maybe we can contribute and help and work together. It's amazing.
We have a big year coming up. I was telling, Aviv was there. I was telling you in a 10-day period next first quarter, we'll have the Super Bowl, the Winter Olympics from Milan Cortina, and the NBA All-Star Game. So we're going to have a lot of people very busy, which means you're going to be very busy.
This has been really, really interesting and really, I'm sure everybody would love to hear it. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It was great. Thanks a lot. Hope to see you
great
soon.
Great to be with you guys.
Wow. What a great conversation. I loved everything, all of his stories. John has a great experience. This was really interesting.
Yeah, he has so much cred in this industry. And I think, he's the guy to come looking for advice once we have something lined up. And I'm happy that we were able to spend time with him. This was great. And we'll have a more exciting guest coming up. So hope to see everyone soon. And we'll see you soon, Aviv.
Really glad we're back to doing this. We got a lot to learn.
Indeed.
See you soon.
Cheers. Bye. Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us and leave a review or share the show with a friend. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please do so now so that you never miss a new episode. We're your hosts. I'm Shaka.
And I'm Aviv. We are the Arnon Brothers, and this has been Sports Content Kings by WSC Sports. Thank you all for joining and looking forward to seeing you here again.